Good morning and happy Tuesday. I'm a day off schedule and I have not, as promised, read the Dayton Daily News, but we're just going to wing it this week. I have a lot on my mind and wanted to share what was rattling around up there. As is common for Ohio weather, we had some really great, beautiful sunny days and then crash, it got cold again. So this weekend, yesterday, Monday, there was snow and rain about noon. I couldn't believe it. I'm not kidding you. It was 70 to 80 the day before that. So that's what we deal with around here. It's my daughter says Ohio doesn't know how to weather. That's her big thing that she says to everyone, but it's okay. We know that we can't plant till mid-May. So I have a lot of seeds and I have some supplies to get ready to plant. I'm going to normally get actual plants from like Lowe's or Walmart, tomatoes, basil, that kind of stuff. But this year I think I'm going to try it from seeds. I was at Dollar Tree and I noticed they have all these seeds for four for a dollar. I was like, maybe I can do it. So I'll let you know if that works out for me. For Ohio law news, last week, a law went into effect that says we can't hold our phones while we're driving, which I think is a good thing. Unfortunately, we're all addicted to our phones and we're all addicted to looking at them. So I think it's going to be a challenge to everybody to get out of that habit. So I guess there's a 6-month grace period, and I've been really practicing not touching my phone. I bought a phone holder, which I've used in the past. They seem to be kind of cheap and break, but I've been doing that and just telling myself, do not touch your phone unless you're stopped. So the law allows you to look at your phone when you're at a stoplight or a stop sign or pulled over on the side of the road. So I have a feeling a lot of people are going to be stuck behind people who aren't moving because they're looking at their phone, which, you know, is safer than trying to do it while you're driving down the highway. So that's what's happening in Ohio law. I don't have any news for other things because, like I said, I haven't read the Dayton Daily yet, but I'll save that for the next episode. News in adoption land. Well, I Zoomed this weekend with a couple think tanks in adoption land, and we talked about all things adoption and culty. And you're probably wondering, what in the world do adoptions and cults have anything to do with each other? But if you look up the BITE model, that's B-I-T-E, created by Dr. Stephen Hassan, he actually borrowed the info from some other thinkers like Dr. Robert Lifton. And if Lifton sounds familiar, he was married to Betty J. Lifton, who was a big thought leader in the adoption community back in the 70s and 80s. I read all of her books, which I found at my local library, and that was how I came into the adoption world. Obviously, I was born and adopted, but you know what I'm saying. As an adult, when I started realizing, there's more to this adoption thing than just a one-time event. But I digress. Anyway, the BITE model. So the BITE model, B, behaviors, I, information, T, thoughts, E, emotions. There's a list of, under each of those categories, that will tell you if you're in a high control group or movement. And it helps you to see if the group or movement that you're part of is cult-like. And Dr. Hassan, I listened to his podcast, he says that everyone has to decide for themselves if some group or movement they're participating in is culty or not. And he doesn't use the word culty. I actually borrowed that from one of my favorite podcasts, A Little Bit Culty, that two of the whistleblowers, Sarah and Nippy from the Val and Nexium cult, they have a podcast called A Little Bit Culty. Their very first episode is an interview with Dr. Stephen Hassan, who created the BITE model. He was a Moonie back when he was 19 years old. He got into the cult. I love hearing his story. It's kind of funny because mainly he was just trying to get laid, but Go listen to him. He'll tell it. It's much better than hearing it from me. So anyway, this Zoom I was attending, we chatted about how adoption is culty in many, many aspects. And the people I was speaking with are interested in working a different angle. Many of us agree that money needs to be taken out of adoption. And that is the long-term goal. Get money out of adoption. Other countries do not put this much money tied to children, and that could help get rid of the adoption predators, the adoption, all the lies, all the manipulations, all the things that go on to separate mothers and babies. So I'm not pro abolition for adoption, although I think it's definitely overused and very culty and done illegally often. I do want to remove the money from adoption. So that was great to hear that there's others in the community. I was hooked up with a few people at Untangling Our Roots who'd been listening to another podcast I've been part of, and it resonated with them, and they had been thinking some of the same thoughts and wanted to chat about it. So that this podcast, I'll put in the show notes. It's at the Adoption Files, and it's the cult-like aspects of adoption. And check out the intro one where Andy and I just riff about all the things that we've seen in the BITE model that are like, hello, culty. And then move on to the interviews we've had with others in the community. We're still doing this series of interviews. We have a birth mom who just republished her book. She's pretty famous, so I won't spoil that, but we're going to be interviewing her, so I look forward to talking to her. All right, I'll tell you. It's Lorraine Dusky. She was the first birth mom who put herself out there. She was a writer, and she wrote a huge article, I believe it was in the New Yorker, outing herself way before birth moms did this publicly. So she's a rock star, and I look forward to chatting with her and see if she believes that adoption is a little bit culty. So some of you know that I was the former president of the Adoptee Rights Coalition, an educational nonprofit that goes to the summit, the Legislative Summit, National Conference of State Legislators, every year. And we have a booth there. And we educate legislators, aides, and anybody else who paid to come to the conference about original birth certificates and encouraging the states that are closed to sponsor a bill, and we talk to them about it, and we give them information, and it's a great time for people in the adoption community to come together. So normally what we do is we invite volunteers from the particular area that the summit is going to be in. So this year, the conference is in Indianapolis, and we're excited to invite some local people. The Board of National Association of Adoptees and Parents has volunteered to join us, join the Adoptee Rights Coalition and myself in Indianapolis to educate about sponsoring bills to open up some of the states that are closed, the original birth certificates for adoptees. For anybody listening to this who's going, what in the heck are you talking about, Lynn? I will give you a brief synopsis of what this birth certificate thing is about. So basically, when any child is born, there is a birth certificate that lists the mother and sometimes the father. Back in the baby scoop era, the father was rarely on there unless the parents were married. So the mother is on the birth certificate, but when an adoption is finalized 6 months to a year, 2 years later, that original birth certificate is sealed by the state and a new amended birth certificate is prepared and put in its place at Vital Statistics. So the child will only see the amended version, and unless the parents or the guardians tell the child that they're adopted, they would really have no way of knowing because of the sealing of birth certificates. And what ultimately long goal would be to get rid of these things and have more of a long version that puts all four parents on there. Something truthful and transparent where the child never has to wonder or get a surprise, like my friend Andy in her 30s, Andy at the Adoption Files, and learns, oh, hey, you're adopted. Everybody in the family knew but you. So that kind of thing would be another future goal for change in adoption. But I digress once again. The point of sharing that is so you understand why we would be educating, asking legislators to unseal the birth record to adoptees. Before the 1930s, all these records were open. And we went into a period of time where the society already believed adoption was shameful as a whole. And then, you know, with out-of-wedlock births and getting pregnant before you were married and all the other, quote, shameful things that were happening right around the same time as the sexual revolution, I think people were super confused as to whether they were on board with sex or not. That was the perfect storm of the baby scoop era and all these records being sealed. Now, there are two states in the U.S., Alabama and Alaska, that never sealed. So you can see that the states weren't exactly on the same page. And so every law, as is normal, and every law in every state is different. And we've had some really great success with opening birth certificates. And the latest big one, I think, was New York, because that started out with a really bad bill. And the whole community came together asking the governor to veto it. So eventually we got a clean one through. I say we, I wasn't part of it, but just the community got a law through and the governor signed it. And so now all New York adoptees can get their birth certificates. So that's our goal at the summit every year. And that's happening in August. And I just heard from the president of Right to Know, and she is going to join us as well. So if you're not familiar with Right to Know, I'm going to put a link in the show notes so you can go check that out. They, along with NAAP, National Association of Adoptees and Parents, were the ones who put on Untangling Our Roots. So I'm really excited to work with Kara. And I look forward to the bonding time because, you know, during the day we work the booth, but in the evenings they have some really cool events at the summit. And, you know, we usually get dinner, go to the bar, just hang out and get to know each other, and I really look forward to that. So that's not happening till August, but I wanted to put a little plug out there so you guys know what kind of advocacy work is happening in adoption land. So last Tuesday, I was honored to be able to attend a Zoom led by Sandy Whitehawk and Gabriel Glazier. Both of them are authors of books I'll put in the show notes. And Sandy is a Native American adoptee who has been featured on PBS. She has she's part of a podcast that I'll also link in the show notes, where the tribe that she returned to did a ceremony welcoming all the lost birds back. Lost birds is just a term that I have in my head because of all the reading I've done. I don't know if they even use that term, but it was a way to welcome anyone who is removed forcefully out of the tribe and then welcome back. So I'll put some of that in the show notes because it's so powerful. And she is working really hard along with Gabriel, who's someone in our community that does not have an actual personal connection to adoption, but wrote an amazing book featuring a baby scoop birth mom. That'll be in the show notes. So the talk was put on by Adoptees United, and it was really, really enlightening. The biggest concern right now is ICWA. That's the Indian Child Welfare Act, and there's a concern that the Supreme Court is going to overturn it. It has been in place, I believe, since the 1980s, and it protects Native children and allows the tribe to decide what happens to them. And there are some white adoptive parents who are fighting to have to adopt some Native children. And I don't know. I don't know about enough about the issue, but I will again post some links so you can investigate and listen to the podcast. I highly recommend you do that. This is a very important federal law that we do not want overturned. So if this is something that calls to you, please get involved. Please send letters. Please talk about this, and let's protect our Native kids and from, you know, being abused and removed and sent to the awful residential schools of the past. And this is something Gabriel also said, is that they're really trying to educate on how prolific these Native children's schools were, these residential schools where they were abused, sexually abused. It was all over the United States. Like, they were everywhere. So I think this is a part of our history that needs to be remembered and not repeated. So look into all of that. It's very sad, but it's important that we keep ICWA. And so, yeah, that's what I did last week that was adoption related. I know it sounds like all I do is adoption stuff, but that's not true. I mean, I have a regular life, so I just like to cover those things on this podcast so you know what's happening out there in adoption land. I did want to mention that Georgia was doing really great and getting ready to allow adoptees their original birth certificates, but I understand it died in committee. So that was a real disappointment for so many of us. But if you live in Georgia, I urge you to get involved and help the cause. We can always try again. So that about wraps up everything I can think about today, and you're probably done listening to my voice. So I look forward to chatting next week, and hopefully I'll have some new information for you. And please go on over to the Adoption Files and listen to our culty interviews and drop me or Andy a line and let us know what you think about it. Or what you think about the BITE model. Or if you would like to be interviewed, get in touch. Have a great day, guys.